Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Welcome back into the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon here live in the Kia Studios for another just under 75 minutes, hour 15, before we hand things off to international soccer match between the U.S. men's national team and Senegal, a warm-up for the lead-up to the World Cup. And to talk about all things soccer in Atlanta over the next hour, 15 minutes, we welcome in Jason Longshore at Longshoe on social media into the studios, into the program. Jason, always great to see you. Man, like, there are some time, like the Olympics for me is like, it's my time. Mm-hmm. No one knows the Olympics like me. This is your time, brother. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
everyone's turned into you.
It's going to be wild. I've been really trying to get caught up on everybody coming in the door because you never know going into a World Cup. We know who the favorites are. It's a tournament that I think the difference between the Olympics in a lot of different sports than the Olympics is in the World Cup, it's a really small number of teams that have won this thing. So when you start going in, it's like, there's 15 teams that have a shot. No, like realistically, no, historically, no. So it's kind of drilling down into who can win. And I think there's a group of about four, maybe five. And I've kind of felt that way for about a year now. Who can make a run? And getting to a semifinal is massive. Getting to a quarterfinal is massive. I think who can get to those spots? And then who could be the darlings? I mean, Cape Verde won 3-0 over Serbia today. Nobody had that on a bingo card a year ago. And Cape Verde could be one of the stories that we get to see play out here in Atlanta firsthand.
They're in Group H against Spain, Uruguay, and Saudi Arabia. We'll talk about the groups a little bit later in the hour. We're going to talk about the U.S. men's national team in our next segment. I want to start here today just with a general look at soccer in our city. Mm-hmm. We're going to start with Atlanta United, then we'll get to the World Cup and some of the other things that are going on. But just a quick thought on Atlanta United's season thus far. They're 14 games in. It's been a tough chunk. You have 20 games that remain. You got a transfer window that opens 4 days before they return to action. And one of the bigger problems, I guess, discussions of these first 14 games on a macro level, not the, hey, this team can't score, we need to do something about our attack, but on the macro level is there was a long stretch in the late middle stage of these 14 games where you were playing well, mm-hmm. and the results didn't match. It's a performance versus results mismatch, and that was one of the bigger problems with these first 14 games. But what have you seen out of Atlanta United? What do you expect to see as we turn the page, and what sort of movement could we envision when the window opens, July 13th, I believe?
Yeah, I mean, there'll be movement before that. I would imagine there are some signings that get done before that happens, but a World Cup summer is kind of tricky. I mean, if you're looking at guys who are at the World Cup, you're not talking to them right now at this point. You've kind of stopped that conversation as teams go into their final week plus of prep. But guys who aren't in the World Cup, yeah, you're having those conversations. And I would imagine that if Chris Henderson has his way, you're going to have some signings made before that game in Nashville, and you're going to have some guys ready to go for that game in Nashville. I mean, when he was on with us in Columbus, he said 2 to 5 additions is what he's talking about. And that's going to require some outgoing too. So there's a lot to balance. We knew that this was not a finished roster going in. We've talked about it. I know I've mentioned it a million times. Chris Henderson has mentioned it many times. They're going to need to move some guys out, and they're going to need a couple of windows to get this team where Tata Martino wants it to be. That's just the facts of the reality of the situation. But you go back to that portion of this schedule where they were playing well and not getting results. They weren't getting results because they can't score goals. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but you have to score goals in this sport. I mean, let's go look at the Champions League final yesterday.
I want to talk about it. Can we move on?
I'll talk about it really briefly. Arsenal, as the year went on, and I thought for the most of the season, Arsenal was the best team in Europe. They lost their ability to score goals consistently. And they had to get very defensive and focus on set pieces. And I give Mikel Arteta a ton of credit for getting what he got out of that group when the goals dried up. Because it's so hard when you can't threaten a team with an attack. It's so hard to get results. And we're seeing that play out with Atlanta. You're controlling games with possession. You're defending pretty well in large, large stretches of games. But you're not scoring goals. So there's nothing to have you break away and change that momentum. Yeah, I hate the cliche that goals change games because it's kind of like, duh. But they do change what happens after in terms of stats, in terms of stance for each team, in terms of the flow of the game. And when you're not scoring them, you don't get to affect games very much.
For those who are not aware, I am an Arsenal fan. I did watch the Champions League final. It went to penalty kicks, and two of the five penalties weren't even on target, and that is inexcusable. And so we move on from that.
Inexcusable is a little hard.
Inexcusable. Yeah. I'd rather it be saved.
Of course.
I'd rather it be saved than whatever that was.
Of course.
Also, don't let defenders take penalties. I'll start with that. Okay. We're moving on. It is Abe Gordon, Jason Longshore chatting here. A lot of soccer coming your way over the next hour on the Abe TL show. All right, so moving on to the World Cup, let's start here in Atlanta. You've got five group stage games, if I counted correctly. You got Spain and Cabo Verde, Czechia and South Africa, Spain and Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Haiti, and Congo versus Uzbekistan. You've then got three knockout games. You've got the round of 32, a round of 16, and a semifinal. Uzbekistan, who does have that group stage game here, mm-hmm. is being hosted here in Atlanta. And then Spain, kind of, at least for the fan base, I would say an unofficial host city because they have both the Cabo Verde game and the Saudi Arabia game. The fans have an opportunity to kind of just bunker down here in Atlanta. But across the whole country, there's been a discussion of the tickets, the hotels, the transportation, some new MARTA trains coming out as well. Mm-hmm. But I just have this idea that beyond the complaints and concerns when it gets here, the city's just going to be on fire, man.
Yeah, I mean, we went through this in 96, you know? Like, there's always the gigantic expectations whenever we have an event like this, which is excitement. And you want to have all these great things happen for your city. Look, we're getting a whole lot of road construction done that maybe should have been done a year ago, but that's a whole other topic. We're getting that done that's going to benefit us. There are things with MARTA that are going to benefit the city in the long run. There's things with the airport that are going to benefit the city in the long run. Just look at Centennial Yards in South Downtown, those developments that are going to benefit the city in the long run, and the impetus for them to get going as quickly as they have is the World Cup coming. So it's going to leave a lot behind. I think maybe there was an outsized expectation, and look, there's other factors too globally that have affected how big this tournament, I think, maybe should have been and won't be because of things that are just outside of the sport's control, but that's a whole nother topic for another day. I look at this as a massive summer for the sport all over the country. And I think a lot of the conversation from a negative standpoint going in about things is going to disappear a week into the tournament.
What do you think? I know this is tough to project, but what do you think comes to our country post this World Cup? The last World Cup obviously kind of led to the development of the league, of MLS.
Yeah.
What does this one mean for soccer in this country, if you even have any thoughts and ideas on that?
Yeah, this will be more subtle because, you know, you have a league now. You have a women's league. You have lower division leagues. You've got so much going on. But what a World Cup does, and I think most hardcore soccer fans, when you ask them about their first World Cup, their eyes light up. It's something that changed their life. I mean, it was for me. I fell in love with the game because of a World Cup, and it changed my life. And I'm sitting here talking soccer with you right now because of it. So you're going to have just that part of it. And I think you're going to have that for so many more people than we've ever had one thing be able to bring the sport to. I look at what we get to do with soccer down here and being all over the state and covering high school. And high school to me is the most grassroots of grassroots. there's not that barrier of entry for kids to play in high school. And when we go to places outside of the metro area where maybe you don't have as many opportunities on the club side of things, and these kids are playing and these kids are wanting to be the best player they can possibly be, and you hear students in the stands like doing chants from Atlanta United games or from other games that they've watched on TV, you see where it is now. And when you get a World Cup where it's going to be in all these different places, I mean, think about kids in Chattanooga. You've got Spain training there. They're doing an open training session next Saturday. You're going to have 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds in the stands that are going to get to see Lamine Yamal and be like, man, I want to be like that guy when I grow up. And it's going to change their life. Like, these are the things. I think we're not going to see this boom straight away. Over the 10 years or so after this, you're going to see soccer in this country look completely different. And most importantly to me, you're going to have more kids in more places playing at a higher level than ever before, because that access conversation is going to change.
We're going to talk about the U.S. men's national team in our next segment. We're going to talk about the groups, kind of a general preview at 2:40, and then a little bit more specifically about today's game against Senegal at 3 o'clock and what we're looking for. But before we get to all that, your nightly World Cup show, your Atlanta Soccer Tonight program, if we count today, which I would like to,
I'm counting it.
Is the first of 50 straight days of soccer programming for you.
Yep.
So just in general, what can our listeners expect when you take to the air as we build up to the World Cup and then certainly as the World Cup is ongoing?
So it's cool to me that we're going to be able to give you all of this content, and we're really the only or one of a handful of stations around the country that are doing this and committing the time to it. So I mean, big thanks to Mike Conte and everybody with Odyssey for making this happen. But you're going to be able to consume this in three different ways. You're going to be able to hear Soccer Talk on the radio 10 o'clock almost every night. There's going to be some special shows that pop around different points in the schedule. But around 10 o'clock, there's going to be special guest appearances all throughout the day talking soccer, talking this tournament. You'll be able to get the whole show as a podcast like you always have been on Off the Woodwork. 2+ hours every night talking World Cup, and you're going to be able to watch the whole thing on YouTube as well. So if you want to watch, if you want to listen on demand, if you want to listen live on the radio, you're going to have all these different ways of consuming it. And I think for those of you who have checked out AST over the years, we try to cover, obviously, we're going to talk a lot of U.S. men's national team, but not only U.S. men's national team. And I think a lot of the English language coverage in this country is going to be focused just on the U.S. and nobody else exists. And we're not going to
I'll be honest, I don't even know how you do that while the whole World Cup is going. Like, I don't know how you even cover it without talking about the games and the players that are...
You have to. You have to talk about a guy like Lamine Yamal. You have to talk about Kylian Mbappe. You have to talk about these teams that are favored, these teams that are surprising, the great goal from somebody random that we're going to learn all about. Like, all those kinds of things, you have to talk the whole tournament. We're going to do that for 2 hours every night, starting tomorrow night, 10 o'clock.
There you go. We'll talk a lot more about the World Cup group stages here at 2:40. But coming up next, we want to break down the roster for the U.S. men's national team. Again, they're taking on Senegal in about an hour. We should get the starting lineups very shortly, but I want to take a look at the overall roster. Some questions I have about it as well. He is Jason Longshore. I am Abe Gordon. The Abe TL Show World Cup preview continues on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Welcome back in the Abe TL Show. A little World Cup edition here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Abe Gordon live in the Kia Studios. I got Jason Longshore here with me. Of course, no one better in this city to chat about the World Cup and what's coming our way over the next 50 days. Well, a little more than 50 days, but over the course of it, it'll be around that. So
yep.
Jason Longshore is here, and I want to talk about the U.S. men's national team. Again, they are playing against Senegal in just under an hour, and we'll talk about the specifics of that matchup and maybe those who are going to tune in, what you can look for in that game in a little bit. You'll be able to listen right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So if you're not looking for something, you can listen for something as you drive around our fine city. But the U.S. men's national team, the roster. It was leaked, but then they announced it officially. We're just going to, I'm going to roll through the whole roster, Jason, then we'll kind of break it down.
Okay.
Some thoughts I have. So you got three goalies, Matt Turner, Matt Freese, Chris Brady. You got 10 guys listed in defense. Matt, this is all, I believe, alphabetical, so no favorites here. Max Arfson, Sergiño Dest, Alex Freeman, Mark McKenzie, Tim Ream, Chris Richards, Anthony Robinson, Miles Robinson, Joe Scally, and Austin Trust. 10 in the midfield, Tyler Adams, Sebastian Berhalter, Weston McKinney, Christian Roldan, Brendan Aronson, Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Malik Tillman, Timothy Weah, and Alejandro Zendejas. And up top, your three attackers, following Balogun, Ricardo Pepi, and Haji Wright. So we'll get to that in a moment, a breakdown of those position groups or whatever you want to call them. The first thought I had, though, Tim Ream named as captain of the United States. I've seen a little bit of how is it not Pulisic? How is it not Tyler Adams? Just your thoughts on Tim Ream being named captain for this tournament.
I think he's the right guy because whether he's on the field or not, and I think Mauricio Pochettino made it clear yesterday that just because he's captain doesn't mean that he will play every game. And you get some guys that fall into that category, and it's not maybe normal or usual for that to be the case, but I don't think Tim Ream is your usual guy with this group. He is kind of the unk of the group, you know? Like, he kind of falls into that role. I think the young guys kind of look at him that way. Talking to Alex Freeman this week about Tim Ream, you know, Freeman is really the right-sided version of Ream, a guy who Ream, when he came up, played outside as a fullback at times. He can play as a center back. He can play as a third center back. Freeman is kind of doing those things on the right, and he talked about how much he pays attention to Ream's positioning and talks to him as much as possible about this stuff. Ream's the captain, whether he's got the armband every minute on the field or not. He's very, very important in a leadership role.
So let me phrase it this way then, because this also leads into a separate question I have, and we'll get down to the specific strengths and weaknesses of the overall roster. Mm. If he is the captain, I would argue maybe not the catalyst. Who would you view as the catalyst for this team? And it doesn't have to be one individual. It could be a couple of different guys.
Yeah, I look at the two guys that are going to make this team go. And to answer the catalyst question, which most important player could be different. You could take that a bunch of different ways. Catalyst, it's Anthony Robinson and Sergiño Dest. It's the fullbacks / wingbacks, depending on how Pochettino plays. If he plays with three center backs, truly three center backs, and Dest and Robinson are wing backs and they get the license to get forward more, you're going to then have the width that you might not have otherwise. You're going to get a guy in Robinson who has done this at the Premier League level and is really good with service from the left, and you get a total wild card with the ball at his feet in Dest. I think the best dribbler in the group, the best guy to make something happen out of nothing. Those are your catalysts.
I want to just follow up on that. I think a lot of people would have expected, well, it's Christian Pulisic. Of course it is. So why not?
Well, he might be one of the most important players. Mm-hmm. But in terms of catalyst, I think I'm not asking him always to break the game open on the dribble or with service. I'm asking him to finish it. And I think that's a different conversation. He is a guy who you go back and you look at the last World Cup, and the goal against Iran that puts the team into the next round. And there's still people who say he hasn't had his moment with the national team. I thoroughly disagree. That goal where he sacrifices his body, he knows he's about to get clocked, but the goal has to happen for the team to get out of the group stage, and he does it. He has struggled this season. Don't get me wrong, but Milan struggled this season to the point that they fired everybody in the front office. They all had to empty out their desks. So Pulisic's not the only one that struggled at Milan. You want to help him be the best version of himself. I think Balogun can help with that because he's been really good coming in. Those are the guys I want to get on the end of things. I want Robinson and Dest, and maybe to a slightly lesser extent, McKennie, to help create those things.
It's Abe Gordon, Jason Longshore, talking about the U.S. men's national team. Yes, ahead of today's performance against Senegal, but also just ahead of the World Cup in general. You got 26 names here on the roster, Jason. What are you viewing in large scale as the strength of this team, and what do you view as a weakness of this team?
I think weakness is you're a little thin in a couple spots. You're a little thin at the six, And if Tyler Adams, who has had injury issues, has an injury issue, that's a struggle. You have center backs, but I don't think you have another one that's close to the level of Chris Richards. So his health is a big talking point going in.
He had an ankle injury a couple weeks ago. They expect him to be okay, but
they're hoping. Yeah. He did not make the trip up to Charlotte. He stayed in Fayetteville to work with the physios there. Hopefully he can factor in at least from the bench on next Saturday against Germany and be ready to start the opener. A lot of people got really bent out of shape when his club manager talked about it being a ligament tear in his ankle. It's a bad sprain. There's ligament tears in every sprain of an ankle. Like, I think he's not wrong in saying it, but everybody panicked, and it's a badly sprained ankle. You were kind of looking at about 4 weeks. That would take you to the opener. It's going to be tight. Can he start the opener? I think you can survive if he can't start the opener. It's the second game against Australia where I think he will be very important, because Australia will put you under pressure playing direct. Paraguay is going to sit deeper, and they're going to really not bunker, but try to play more on the counter. I think you can get by without him there. You need him for game two.
And what do you view as the strengths of this squad?
I think the togetherness of this group. I mean, you're going to have the home field advantage, and these games against Senegal and Germany are really important to building, I think, momentum in the stands, in the effect that being the home team will help you, because it can. Absolutely. You get late in games, and I think this team will be very fit. I think they will be very able to affect games late. And that's one of those talking points for me in this tournament, that when I look at teams that can make runs, it's going to be those teams. I think Ecuador can do that. I think Colombia can potentially do that. I think teams in this hemisphere in general can do that. Some of the European teams might struggle when you get into that 80th minute and it's hot and they are kind of under pressure at that point. So I think just the fact that this team plays with a lot of intensity, they have a lot of togetherness, and they're going to be fitter than a lot of teams they face. They're going to fight till the final whistle. And there's going to be a game where they either have to hold on late and they're going to have the energy to do it, or they're going to have to turn it late to go win, and they're going to have the energy and the ability to go do that.
26-man roster for the U.S. men's national team was released on Tuesday. Jason Longshore joining me here on the Abe TL show, breaking it down. I will say this, and I have a couple of questions that remain on the U.S. national team in general ahead of the World Cup.
I was hoping we'd have a lineup by now for today, but we do not.
One of my overall concerns about the team is the lack of, and this is not necessarily something the U.S. men's national team has always had, and they just don't have it right now, the lack of an alpha score, the lack of a guy that, hey, this is our goal scorer, he's the one that's mm-hmm. putting it in. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I don't think you need an alpha necessarily, but just in general, who's going to step up, who's going to be the goal scorer? And you got Balogun, Pepe, and Haji Wright up top, but I also think guys, and you mentioned Pulisic, I think Aronson has been a goal scorer at the club level as well.
They're all different.
That's the question for me, because I think this team, I'm very confident in this team's ability to defend. I think they have a pretty good goalie. I'm solid across the
back. I don't know
back.
Who's going to start in goal. That's actually a question.
I'm less concerned. I just think...
I think they're both solid.
Yeah.
Right. I think it is a question as to who gets it between Turner with experience, mm-hmm. Freeze, who was the guy coming in. But Turner was so good in the first portion of the MLS season. I think he's in great form. I don't know who's going to be that starter, but I'm okay either way.
What? Right.
Yeah. I think in terms of having one goal scorer, Balogun is that guy for me.
Yeah.
I think he proved
that's
it
who I
this season in Europe. But you've got Pepe, who's a great late-game player. You've got Haji Wright, who's a little bit more of a complete nine and can be more involved in build-up. He can also play wide if you need to kind of change your formation and get a little more attack-minded. Pulisic can make runs from deeper positions. We know about Gio Reyna's ability on the ball. Just can mm-hmm. he be consistent? Alexander Dejas is the other one that not a lot of people in this country are talking about enough, because he plays in Liga MX. He plays for Club America. He has scored goals consistently for one of the top teams in this hemisphere and dealt with the kind of pressure that makes a World Cup, like, not easy, but easier because of playing in Mexico City on a regular basis. Zendejas, for me, could be that one that is a surprise in the starting lineup for this team.
And that's one of the things I want to talk about in about 30 minutes when we really ramp up the pregame specific to the Senegal match and we talk about what we're looking for. I think there is so much value into who's good for 60, 65 minutes and who provides that spark. And I do think to an extent you can use these games against Senegal and Germany to really see who's strong coming off, getting into the flow of the game quickly when it's already the 60 or 70 minute. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
This tournament is going to be interesting for that because remember, you've got the hydration breaks that are going to be consistent everywhere now. So
yeah.
Don't even think of it as a hydration break anymore. Somebody, and I'm sure it'll go viral on Twitter because somebody will say something like, oh, they're playing in an indoor stadium. There's air conditioning. Why do they don't need a hydration break? They already agreed. Everybody's doing hydration breaks at all points. This is going to be consistent. I will be willing to put money on it that by the time we get to the next World Cup in 2030, most leagues around the world will do the break in the middle of the half. For hydration, for coaching, which is going to be a big factor as well, and yeah, to sell some ads and have more money come into the game, like that's going to be consistent going forward. What I'm looking for in this tournament, which coaches use that break, especially in the second half,
yeah,
at the 67th, 68th minute, to change the game. Somebody will. And it's going to start to become a very important moment in every match.
The final question here is we talk about the U.S. men's national team from kind of a more macro scale. And I guess it is what is the type of team we're expecting to see? Is this a team that will excel on set pieces? Is this a team that you see a lot of 3-2 games? Or is it more kind of a lower scoring affair and you try and you know, trouble the opponent, make sure you're tough to break down? Is this a counterattacking offense? Like, what kind of in general? And some of these won't be answered until we see him on the pitch in the World Cup. I understand that. But your expectations of what this team might look like and how attractive a style they will play.
Well, it's going to depend a little bit on the opponent. And I think in this group, you get Paraguay, who, in my opinion, will be very comfortable sitting back to defend against Australia. They'll be pretty vertical, pretty direct, pretty physical. Turkey, a little more complete, but they just don't have a lot of experience at the World Cup level. Very technical. So I think each game could look a little different. But if you're looking for commonalities in the U.S. and the way that they'll play, I think if they play well, they will be a very intense team defending high up the field. Not always just pressing, but I think they're going to try to have possession. They're going to try to have possession in the attacking half. And when it turns over, they're going to fight to win it back high up the field. They're not going to drop to sit back and defend and counter. If they play well, they're going to disrupt teams. They're going to force turnovers. They're going to get goals out of that. But it's going to be about finding ways to control games. You know, we've had this conversation with Atlanta United this season. We talk about what PSG has done over these past couple of years. And it's hard to control a game for 90 minutes. But can you control the overall flow? Can you kind of break the other team's rhythm? And for the U.S., to me, that's going to be Balogun, Pulisic, Zendejas, Aronson when he's there, McKennie when he's there, Reyna when he's there, defending high up the field. Your attackers defending. If this team does that, they're going to be a handful to play against.
We'll get a little bit more into the U.S. men's national team in about 30 minutes, or just under 30 minutes, as we await the starting lineups. We'll talk about their performance coming up against Senegal. But when we come back, I want to take a look generally at the World Cup, the teams that can win it, the teams that could surprise. We'll go through group by group and talk about it. That's what's coming up next on the Abe TL Show, featuring a special hour-plus appearance from Jason Longshore. So stick around. More World Cup preview coming your way on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome back in the Abe TL Show, little World Cup edition here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I got Jason Longshore at Longshoe hanging out with me, breaking it all down. If you've been asleep for the last 4 years, Rip Van Winkle style, it's now a 48-team tournament, and it is expanded into 12 groups, each still with four teams, and eight of the 12 third-place teams in this tournament will be advancing. So you got groups A through group L, which is like a Peachtree start wave all the way down there. We're going to talk about it now as we continue the buildup to what should be a fantastic summer of World Cup action here in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Speaking of Mexico, they are atop the rankings, and I listed the groups here, and I just sorted them by world ranking.
Yep.
In terms of just listing them off. So Group A consists of Mexico, Korea Republic, Czechia, and South Africa. And I think the general question I want to ask you, Jason, as we go through each of these groups, is this essentially a one-team group, a two-team group, a three-team group, or a four-team group in terms of who you think can win the group, or specifically how many teams can you envision finishing second? So Mexico, Korea, Czechia, and South Africa in Group A.
I mean, I think all of them could advance. I think it's kind of an even group in that regard. Mexico and South Korea are the two that have the best shot to win it. Mexico won against Australia last night, 1-0 at the Rose Bowl. Pretty good. They were under a lot of pressure in that game. South Korea won 5-0 over Trinidad and Tobago in Provo, Utah last night. South Korea needed that. Sun Heung-min needed that. He hasn't scored any goals for LAFC this season. He scored last night. I think South Korea is the best team in the group quality-wise, but Mexico playing in Mexico is a really difficult team to beat. I think Mexico wins the group. South Korea is second, and it's a toss-up between the other two. Czechia is better offensively. South Africa is a good defensive team, but they struggle to score goals.
Moving on to Group B, atop the rankings there, Switzerland, followed by Canada, Qatar, and Bosnia and Herzegovina. They're 65th in the world.
Three teams have a shot in this one. I don't think Qatar is one of them. They did qualify this time on their own, but it's a lot of the same guys from 4 or 3.5 years ago, and they weren't great in that tournament. Bosnia and Herzegovina will be a tough team to get past. They are a really good team. I think they're much better than their ranking of 65th. Canada, a lot of it's going to depend on Alphonso Davies. He is injured, might not be available game one. I don't think they're good enough to really overcome missing that level of a player. Switzerland, good win for them over Jordan. Really good first half. They kind of dropped off in the second half and let Jordan come back into it. And I don't think Jordan is a team that's going to get out of the group here in this tournament. The Swiss are all right.
They always feel tough in the group stage.
Yeah, they're one of those that's always like, all right, I feel good about them getting out of the group and then going home.
Right.
And I kind of have that sense here. Canada's the wild card. If Davies comes back and they get that home field advantage, they could win the group.
Yeah.
But they've also never gotten out of the group stage in a tournament before. This is their third World Cup.
They've also never hosted, so
yep.
we'll see if that makes a difference.
Very true.
Group C feels like a very strong two-team and a very weak bottom two-team here. Brazil, Morocco, both of those top 10 world rankings, and then Scotland and Haiti way down there.
Yeah, Haiti will not be an easy team to beat. I think just the fact that they qualified without playing any home games, you give them a ton of credit. They're limited, though. I think Scotland is a little limited on their own doing. I'm not a huge fan of Steve Clarke as the manager. I think he's overly defensive with a team that has some attacking talent. They have one of the best players in the world in Scott McTominay. They lost Billy Gilmore yesterday to injury, and that's going to really hurt them because they don't have a lot of top-tier talent. Brazil and Morocco are top 10 teams. I think they're both a little flawed. I have them kind of out of the main group of contenders. Morocco changed their coach after the AFCON tournament, which I think was a huge mistake. He's who took him to the semifinals last time. Brazil, what is Neymar going to be? I think he'll be a little bit of a talisman kind of coming off the bench.
Now we
got to
talk about, because he got banged up a little bit. Didn't he get a calf
thing? He stays banged up. Yeah, he's very possibly going to miss the game one. But defensively, and that's why you go out and you hire Carlo Ancelotti, can he make them better? Because it was not an easy qualifying run for that team.
Group D is the one featuring the United States. It's the U.S., Turkey, Australia, and Paraguay. And before we get into the breakdown of the group, I know group of death changes a little bit because of 32 teams. Or 48 teams, but 32 advancing in the third place and all that. By world ranking, I think you would argue that this is the group of death with the lowest seeded team at 40. The other discussion would probably be group F, where Tunisia is the lowest ranked team at 44. But USA, Turkey, Australia, and Paraguay in group D.
It's the toughest in terms of spread from the top seed at 16 is the US to the bottom seed, which is 40 in Paraguay. Every team could win all the games. Every team could lose all the games. I think the U.S. is the most talented one. I believe in terms of talent, I would actually have it according to the FIFA rankings, U.S., Turkey, Australia, Paraguay. Paraguay doesn't score a lot of goals. They will be tough to break down. Alfaro is a very good manager. I think Australia is a team that is maybe the most limited of the four. I'm not very high on them. They did test Mexico last night, but they didn't score against Mexico either. Turkey is the one that nobody wanted in this group coming out of that playoff because they make it so much more difficult.
All right, in Group E, you've got Germany at 10, Ecuador, the Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, and Curaçao making their debut.
Ecuador, to me, is going to be one of the biggest surprises in this tournament.
I don't think you're the only one who said that, I've heard it more from you than anyone else.
There's a few who are starting to get on that train.
Yeah.
But Ecuador, I think their coach, Sebastian Bekasese, is one of the great coaches that people don't know a lot about. I think they're a team that can really take advantage of the climate and run teams into the ground. And they've got a great midfield, and the base of that is Moises Caicedo. He's one of the best players in the world in his position. It's going to be, can they get somebody to get hot in the offensive end? Enner Valencia is still somebody you're asking to score goals for that team. Germany's very good. I don't think they're a contender to win this tournament, which honestly is a good place for Germany to be because as an underdog, I think the Germans are going to be even more difficult. Cote d'Ivoire, it's always they're super talented, but can they put it together in a tournament? And they typically struggle to do that.
Group F features the Netherlands, Japan, Sweden, and Tunisia. Netherlands, a top 10 team world ranking. Japan, a top 20 team world ranking.
Japan's another one that I've got on my list that I think will make a deep run because they're another team that can take advantage of wearing teams out. They are equally comfortable with 60% of the ball or with 30% of the ball. They're really dangerous on the counter, but they can also control games. They're super technical. I think Japan will give everybody in that group a tough time. The Dutch, I don't think they're quite as good as they were last time around, where Argentina knocked them out in the quarterfinal, but they have talent. Sweden is the wild card here because when you look at the attack that Sweden can field with Alexander Isak, so many other talented players, I think their front line in the last year have went for transfer fees over $300 million. So tons of talent. They were terrible in qualifying. They got into the playoff because of the Nations League side of things, and Graham Potter gets them to the tournament. Attacking wise, they can play with anybody in that group. I think they get out of the group, but I don't want to discount Tunisia either. You mentioned it. That might be equally as tough as Group D because from front to back, everybody's competitive.
Well, we are midway through breaking down these groups. It already sounds like we've talked about an entire World Cup here, but we still got six groups left to go, and that starts with Group G, Belgium, Egypt, Iran, and New Zealand in this one.
Belgium will win the group. I'm not worried about that. I think New Zealand will really struggle to be competitive in this one. Iran is so hard to read because of just the disruption that they will have in getting ready for this, just getting players together. You're going to have a lot of emotion for Iran in this tournament. And they're a very good team. They're a very talented team. Iran and Egypt, I think the winner of that will advance out of the group.
Group H, it kind of, we talked about Group C being a real big split at the top and bottom, Brazil, Morocco, Scotland, Haiti. A Group H kind of feels a little bit of the same, Spain and Uruguay, and then also Saudi Arabia and Cabo Verde.
I am buying in that Cabo Verde is not going to be as bad as their ranking. They won 3-0 today over Serbia, which turns a lot of heads. They beat everybody big that was in front of them in Africa in qualifying, which was not an easy run. Cameroon's not here because of what Cabo Verde did. They're a strong defensive team, which in a World Cup, I think, can get you out of a group. I think it limits how far you can go, but being a strong defensive team can get you out of the group. Uruguay is a little defective compared to where they've been in the past. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of conversation about not getting along with the manager, Bielsa, who is called El Loco for a reason. Spain will win the group. I think Cabo Verde will get out of the group, and I think Uruguay will go to the knockouts with them.
And that's an interesting group H there, because a couple of those games are going to be here in Atlanta. You mentioned Spain and Cabo Verde, Spain and Saudi Arabia out of Group H playing in Atlanta. Group I, France, Senegal, Norway, and Iraq.
Poor Iraq being in this group. It's amazing they got here through the playoff, but they're going to get beat up. Norway could be a team that, you know, everybody looks at Erling Haaland and Martin Odegaard. Senegal is talented. I don't think they're as talented as Norway. And France, to me, they took over the number one ranking after the March window. They took over the number one spot for me as the favorite coming into the tournament.
Yeah. Group J, you've got Argentina, Austria, Algeria, and Jordan.
Austria will be a tough one.
Yeah.
That's Ralf Rangnick, who is really one of the architects of the pressing version of soccer that we've seen really take hold over the last 10, 20 years. He's got Austria playing in that way. Algeria is also a really good team. The Northern African teams have come on huge here in the last 10 years or so. Jordan, I think, will struggle to get anything, but they did look much better against Switzerland in the second half. Argentina is older. I think they are still a team that you have to knock off until, you know, before you can really count them out. Somebody's got to beat them. They've won every trophy that they've played for since 2021.
Just two groups left here. It's Abe Gordon, Jason Longshore breaking down group by group the World Cup. Group K is Portugal, Colombia, Congo, and Uzbekistan. And they've got a game here between Congo and Uzbekistan in Atlanta.
Everybody's pumped about Portugal and Colombia. I think that game in Miami at one point was the hardest ticket to get. Colombia, they're going to be tough, but watching them in the March window, I was a little disappointed. And I think a lot of it is down to you're asking James Rodriguez and Juanfer Quintero to turn back the years about 10 on the dial to be what they need. You do have Luis Diaz, who is in the form of his life. And if you can keep getting him hot and keep feeding him, and they have Luis Suarez, who was very good in Europe, different Luis Suarez than the Uruguayan one. But
well, you won't be seeing that one.
He won't be seeing him. He tried to put his name back out there, and Bielsa was like, nah, I'm good, thanks. I think Colombia could get hot. I think they're going to be the team that, if you don't pay attention really to soccer in this country a whole lot, Colombia might surprise you with how big the crowd support is going to be. I think outside of the U.S., Mexico, Canada, and then your England and Argentina that will travel really well, Colombia will be the fans that we're talking about.
And I think you probably see some carryover if you go back to the World Baseball Classic and what Colombia was able to do down in Miami.
You saw it in the Copa America a couple years ago, too.
The other thing that's interesting for some of these games, if Colombia can eke out a draw against Portugal,
they can.
Then it becomes, I'm not saying they can't beat Portugal, but then it becomes, you know, a real race
the
between what
here,
Portugal does against the other two and what Colombia do against the other
two. The game here in that group with DR Congo and Uzbekistan, I think the winner will advance.
Third place team.
That'll be a really fun game here to close out that group.
Final group, Group L, England, Croatia, Panama, and Ghana.
England is a contender to win the World Cup this year. I don't know if they are at the same level as France and Spain and Argentina, but they're in that top four. They're number four in the FIFA rankings. I totally believe that. Croatia is very talented, but they're also getting up there in age from their golden generation. Panama could be a surprise. Panama and what Thomas Christensen has done with that team over the past few cycles, and we've seen them in CONCACAF, we've seen them in Gold Cups. They're a very talented team. Ghana has had a whole lot of issues. They fired their coach not that long ago, which is never a good sign coming into a tournament. I think Panama will get out of the group. I think Panama will go to the knockouts for the first time.
Panama, in my opinion, is this year's or this version's Costa Rica. Costa Rica is always a team I watch. I'm like, man, these guys are so good, and they win games in advance. And then, you know, obviously, you fall apart at some point. But that's kind of they reminded me of Costa Rica, who unfortunately is not in the tournament this year.
You always get that being in the hemisphere that the tournament is played in. It is a boost. I think Panama could take advantage.
Absolutely. All right, there's the 48-team 12 group preview of the World Cup. When we come back, we have the starting lineup for the U.S. men's national team against Senegal. We'll break that down and a couple of other questions about what today means for the U.S. men's national team and what specifically to look for, listen for, as that game's coming your way here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Abe Gordon. It's Jason Longshore, the Abe TL Show, back in five on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back in the Abe TL Show as we wrap up a U.S. men's national team and a general World Cup preview here with Jason Longshore. In about 15 minutes, U.S. men's national team going to be taking on Senegal right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We do have your starting 11 here, Jason, for the U.S. men's national team. We're going to focus on it and other questions surrounding the men's national team. Matt Turner, Serginho Dest, Tyler Adams, Anthony Robinson, Gio Reyna, Ricardo Pepi, Christian Pulisic, Tim Ream, of course, wearing the captain's armband, as we mentioned, Sebastian Berhalter, Alex Freeman, and Mark McKenzie, your starting 11 today.
I think the way this is going to go, I mean, obviously, Turner in goal. Three center backs, I'm expecting Ream, McKenzie, and Freeman. Freeman could be the right back. This could be a 4-3-3. This could be a 3-4-2-1. I'm hoping it's a 3-4-2-1 because I think that suits the team the best. I think we saw that in the second half of 2025 when they played much more in that shape. It just worked better. And I think it really works for Robinson and Dest as the wing backs. Freeman can be the right back, though, and it can be four. Dest could play as a winger. I think your holding midfielders are Adams and Berhalter. Your attacking midfielders are Pulisic and Reyna. Your nine is Pepi. Wherever they are positionally, and we know how fluid it can be, Dest and Robinson are key out wide. Reyna needs to show something here, and that's been the conversation about him, honestly, for about 4 years. And it's fair because he hasn't played a lot at the club level, but he's been good for the national team. We know he's talented. Can he elevate his game right now? And can you start to build Pulisic's confidence up a little bit? I think that these two games are going to be very important for that.
You mentioned this double matchup here with Senegal and Germany. Just a reminder, Germany number 10 in the world rankings. This is not just a random African team. Senegal's one of the top 15 teams in the world. They're 14th in world rankings. So it is a very good and competitive opponent that you are facing. And I think one of the questions, you look at this starting lineup today here, and even if it isn't based on what they're running out there today, I guess a general question for the U.S. men's national team for you, Jason, is are jobs and positions actively up for grabs? And is there still a debate to some extent about who is more beneficial at the starting whistle versus coming off the bench?
Yeah, and I think we're starting to have a different conversation in the game about using subs in a different way. It used to be best 11 to start, no question about it, and then when guys get tired, you sub them out. It's not that anymore. People are more strategic about it, and especially with five subs, you can have a couple that you're very strategic about. Like, hey, this guy's really good for 60 minutes. Okay, I'm only going to play him for 60 minutes. And I've got somebody else who's really good to close the game out in the last 30, and they bring something different. That's what I'm going to use. So I think you're going to see some of that in this tournament. I think there is competition. I think the goalkeeper position with Matt Freeze and Matt Turner, that's a toss-up for me. Turner has the experience. Freeze was better for the national team coming into the calendar year, but I don't know if he's been better at the club level.
Real quick on that, Matt Turner getting the start today. Would you read into anything if Matt Freeze is not given the start against Germany?
I think he will be. If he doesn't start there, then Turner's your starter in the World Cup. I think McKenzie, it's a big day for him because Richards is out. You need McKenzie to step up. We know what Tim Ream is at this point. We know his limitations at being 38 years old. Like, pace is not going to be something he is blessed with. Organizationally on the ball, very, very good with that left foot, and he's going to be a very important factor here. I think it's a big day for Freeman, and Alex Freeman is a guy that we've talked up quite a bit over the last 18 months or so. Had the chance to watch him grow with Orlando City B and then turned into a first team player for Orlando City, and he is an absolute monster on the right side in terms of he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the strength, he's got the ability on the ball in the attacking third to be dangerous, not just in the air, but with the ball at his feet, and he can defend. He is the complete wide player at this point in what you would want. And I think for the U.S., if Pochettino uses him this way, he can be that right center back with three center backs that has no problem at all stretching out to turn it into a line of four when it needs to be. He can turn into a right back. Or no problem at all bombing forward and creating overloads down that right side with Dest. I think if Freeman is the right center back in this three and Dest is the right wing back, it gives Dest so much freedom to go forward and impact the game. And he's the one that I want to have the most freedom.
Just for a little bit of familiarity, if you were unaware, Alex Freeman, his father, mm-hmm. NFL receiver Antonio Freeman.
So. Yeah, he talked about Antonio was with him in Spain when the roster announcement came out, so they got to share that together. It's been really cool this past week. I've been down in Fayetteville at the National Training Center Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and getting a chance to talk to a lot of the players about what that announcement was like, just kind of where things are for them at this stage. Freeman, Max Arfston is one that I would expect we might see today. He's another wide player that could factor in. We've watched him grow up with the crew. Sebastian Berhalter, he's another one on the list today in terms of getting the start. Can he be that guy that allows you to maybe play Weston McKennie higher up the field? I think the holding midfield duo is going to be Adams and McKennie. I think that maybe is the best suited group for this team. But if Berhalter can step up and play well and be that guy and free McKennie up, because McKennie can play about six or seven different positions in this group. If McKennie is higher up the field and it's McKennie, Pulisic, and the nine, which we think will be Balogun in the games that count, I like that attack a lot.
McKennie available off the bench, and then you mentioned Balogun. I wanted to ask you about that. Ricardo Pepi getting the go from the opening whistle today. If it is Balogun, what sort of role is he looking at? Is this something where you make changes early? You don't see a lot of teams take the striker off of that early.
Yeah.
Maybe you add a striker, but...
I think it's 60-30. I think if it's Balogun starting games and Pepi closing games out, I wouldn't be shocked if that's what we see a lot. If it's Balogun going to 60-ish... and Pepi going the final bit.
And I would argue that's a little earlier than most teams would take out a striker.
Yeah, and you got to remember, too, you've got this new hydration break in the 60. It'll be in the middle, the first stoppage, after 22 and a half minutes are played. So around the 68th minute, you might wait till that. But you're going to go into these games, and you're thinking about how you get through the group. And I think it does change it a little bit because... And you got a little more time between games than maybe you're accustomed to in a normal World Cup, but you've got a little bit of travel for the U.S. You're L.A., you're Seattle, you're back to L.A. I think you're looking at the 270 minutes and how can you maximize the impact of every player's time in that 270 minutes. And you might pull guys a little bit earlier, especially early in game one. Versus game three, where you might need a result to get out of the group.
Yeah, and certainly whether you pull, whether you leave in, all that stuff also is going to depend on what the situation is in each game. And as you get through the
game one could be a little more scripted.
Yeah.
And game two will be a little different. And game three is whatever it takes.
Tactically, formation-wise, do you think they're pretty set? Whether it's going to be a 3-4-2-1 or a 3-4-3, whatever it's going to be, just in terms of at this point, there's not going to be a ton of change. It's a little late, right?
I think, but in March, we saw things look differently. And maybe that was the opportunity for Pochettino to try something different. I thought, and it got really confusing, and I don't know why it got so confusing. I think when this team was on its run of wins in September, October, November of 2025, they more often than not played with really, truly three center backs. I think they kind of tried to hybrid that a little bit in the games in March where you had a guy like Tanner Tessman, who ultimately wasn't picked for the final roster, play kind of as a midfielder, kind of as a center back. It felt more disjointed. It didn't look very structured. I don't know if it was as structured as it needed to be. This lineup, although it could be a 4-3-3 because Freeman can play as a right back in this situation and Dest can play as a right winger, I think it shows you that Pochettino is going back to what worked last fall, more of a true 3-4-2-1. And the way that should play, if I'm reading it this way and what I think is the best for this group at this point, Pepi obviously is your nine. Underneath him, Pulisic and Reyna are like two tens. It's like a box midfield with Pulisic and Reyna in front of Adams and Berhalter. Dest and Anthony Robinson are flying up and down the wings. They've got to cover both. But you also have a guy in Freeman as a right center back who can go out wide. He can cover all that ground. McKenzie can cover all that ground. You're not asking Ream to cover quite as much. Robinson might be a little bit safer on the left because of that. Dest, you want him every chance he gets to go impact the game in the attacking half. He is your biggest game breaker in this roster.
The other important thing that we're looking for as we play Senegal here in 5 minutes, but also Germany coming up, is just to escape healthy and not suffer any injuries. And that's not a U.S. national team. That's kind of everyone.
Yeah, I mean, Billy Gilmore for Scotland yesterday. We've seen a couple other injuries around the world in these games. But you also can't wrap these guys in bubble wrap.
It happens. But
you got to go out and play. You can't play scared.
It'd be nice to avoid them.
It would be nice, but this is why, and Pochettino's talked about it when it comes to Chris Richards. The rosters are in. I think they're officially locked tomorrow, according to FIFA. You have the 26, that is your World Cup roster. Mm-hmm. Every country had to do a 55-man preliminary roster. That's where you can make changes from. And you can make changes up until 24 hours before your first match. So you have time in Chris Richards, for example, and you're going to give him every second of that time to get healthy and make a decision. Canada's in this with Alphonso Davies. There are other guys in this tournament. You could make a change. I think the fact that the U.S. did not bring an extra center back with them, Canada's brought some extra guys around. Scotland had done that. One of those guys ends up getting on the plane to come to the U.S. because of the injury to Gilmore. Mexico has had a couple extra guys around. I think the fact that the U.S. hasn't brought extra guys should make you feel pretty good about where Chris Richards is. They didn't bring Tristan Blackman or Walker Zimmerman into camp as the, okay, if Richards can't go, they're ready, they've been with us, they can immediately slot in.
I know we got just a couple of minutes left, and I want to talk about the show you've got coming for the next, including today, 50 days and nights. But just in general, the expectations for the USA at the World Cup, what is kind of allowable, understandable as a spot for them to reach? What is maybe a little more expected from you? And then what is maybe an overachievement in terms of where they end up?
That's exactly the way I'm looking at it. I think you have to get out of the group. If you don't get out of the group, it's a failure. If you get out of the group, it's job done. Because this is not an easy group to get out of. You get out of the group, job done. To really give the gold star to Mauricio Pochettino and his coaching staff, you need to win a knockout game. The U.S. has only won
just one.
They've only won one ever.
And just real quick, if you win the group, you are facing a third-place team.
Yep. It's big if you can. But here's the thing, and we see it happen all the time. You can win the group, and somebody good falls into
bad
a third-place spot, and it's a tough matchup. You could get the other way, where you get a favorable matchup. The one knockout game you've won in history. And I think this is where expectations get out of joint for the U.S. They've only won one time. It was against Mexico, a team that they were not afraid of. The U.S. failed in Game 3 of the 2002 World Cup. They lost to Poland, but that put them into a favorable matchup. And they got Mexico, and they beat them, and
they went
to the quarterfinal.
They got jobbed in the next round.
They did get jobbed, but they also played their best ever World Cup match in that quarterfinal against Germany. Yeah. It was an amazing performance. If the U.S. gets out of the group, job done. If they get out of the round of 32, then Pochettino has done what only Bruce Arena's done in winning a knockout game. Round of 16 is where I think they are. I think that's the FIFA rankings have them there. I think they're that level of a team. You do have to hope the bracket falls your way a little bit to get there, because you could get a really tough round of 32, but also you do your job and you get to that, you could get a very comfortable round of 32 game, and you could get a comfortable round of 16 game. And then that momentum starts to build. But if you get to the round of 16 in this tournament, then Mauricio Pochettino can do whatever he wants afterwards. He has been a success for this team and this country.
You got 30 seconds here, Jason, but your nightly World Cup show starts tomorrow night. What can we expect each evening?
All the things. A lot of U.S. talk tomorrow, obviously, but we're going to talk about this tournament as a whole. We're going to talk about what's going on all over the city of Atlanta. We're going to be all over the city of Atlanta. We're going to be out places. You can watch all of every show on YouTube. You can listen to all of every show as a podcast on Off the Woodwork. And you can listen to a lot of every show right here on 92.9 The Game, mostly at 10 o'clock every night.
That's going to do it for the ABTL show here on a Sunday afternoon. Stick around. U.S. Men's National Team action against Senegal coming your way. I want to thank Garrett Chapman, who's been working with me here today. I want to thank Justin Fensterman, who joined us to chat NBA Finals. And, of course, Jason Longshore, who spent an hour plus in studio with me. Coming up next, U.S. Men's National Team action on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.